Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome to Going Off Track.
Hi, I'm Benny.
I'm Brad.
And we are in the basement of A Bar in Greenpoint.
That's true.
So thank you to them.
A space bar.
Wait,
yes. Should we tell people? Greenpoint's in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. It's right above Williamsburg. Get off the train, look for all the fancy places and tourists, and then walk that way.
Jonah,
and
did you know that if you took Brooklyn out of New York City, it would be the 7th largest city in America?
I did not know that. I didn't know it's big, though.
7th might not be the real number, but it's around there.
Can I tell you another fun fact about Brooklyn?
Please.
So whenever this, I don't know when this was, but whenever the centennial of the Brooklyn Bridge was, I think it was like 20 years ago or something. But at that point in time, something like 15% of all Americans had lived or lived in Brooklyn.
Huh. I believe that.
I gotta look that up because it's a fun fact.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that is it. Yeah, I believe it.
Half of my family.
Yeah.
There you go.
Love it.
There we go.
Brad, you gotta come with harder numbers. You know what I mean?
I know, that's a pretty lame number.
I threw out the 7th, not even knowing it was correct, but just really sound confident.
That's all you gotta do, sound confident.
Act as if, man.
I don't know what I'm talking about half the time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, nobody's gonna
most of the time.
I'm just faking it. I literally just know a bunch of big words. I just don't even know what I'm saying.
I don't know what you're saying either.
Mellifluous.
Today on the podcast, we have a friend, former guest host, Chris Norris.
Chris Norris, aka
Steak Mountain, who has just published a book that comes out on Valentine's Day, or came out on Valentine's Day, and it is called Hunchback 88.
Yeah.
And we talk about it a lot on here, and if it sounds interesting to you, you should buy it, support Chris.
And this is a great podcast to listen to.
Yes.
Because
why do you think so, Benny?
Because that guy...
Because Benny talks so much in it.
It dives super deep into things I like talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is the general nature of humanity and trying to figure this out. That kid has thought a lot about it.
Yes.
He's sort of narrowed down exactly the way he feels about it. And I find people like that fascinating.
And he's very secure in his identity.
He is. I kept trying to almost like find cracks in it. I'm like, what piece of childhood trauma caused this or something, you know? Like that's the, but no, he seems very comfortable in what I'm very impressed.
Yes.
Very impressed.
And you sound very smart in this podcast.
I do. Yes.
I really felt like you would really like, you were bringing it.
Yo, I have failed out of 3 colleges. Never.
You would never know it, my friend.
You'd never know it. So let's get into it right now with our friend Chris Norris.
It's going off track.
Yeah, it's smart.
Yeah, maybe that's like the future of show going is like the new Alamo movie theaters and stuff where like you can just sit and get like mozzarella sticks and shit like that while you see bands.
Think of all the times
I'd kind of be into that actually for some bands.
I would probably go to shows again.
Like sitting bands? Like if I went to see The National, no issue chilling, eating some mozzarella sticks.
No, please.
Just like
for
someone
them.
Coming to me, like bringing me a couple drinks.
I need a mattress to see that band.
Yeah. I would have a full meal for them. Wait, what would you have?
I need a mattress.
But if you're eating,
if
it's like a cocktail bar style,
yeah.
Do those places still exist where you have to like three drink minimum just to go and like sit.
In Vegas. I mean, for comedy shows, it's still the model.
Still, right?
Yeah.
I remember I had to do that to see George Carlin when I was a kid. Yeah.
You saw Carlin?
I did see Carlin.
How have we never talked about this? Brad, are we rolling? Tell me we're rolling.
Club Binet in New Jersey.
Wow.
It was the jamming in New York. It was the one after jamming in New York. But he was doing like all those bits from jamming in New York.
Was this post Bill and Ted?
Yeah. I think so. Maybe not Bogus Journey. I don't know when Bogus Journey came out. And it's still early 90s.
That's like 92.
Yeah. When did God Gave Rock and Roll to You come out? Because that they were congruous.
Oh, yeah. The makeup was off.
Shit. I don't know.
Rock and roll to you.
That's a
Bogus Journey's 91, man.
Dude, that movie fucked me up a little bit.
Bogus Journey?
Some of the scenes in Bogus Journey, like the...
Where he popped his eye out and stuff?
No, the one scene that I still remember is the hell scene where he's like going through the hallway with all the little doors and he's kind of trapped.
The Easter Bunny.
Very much freaked me out when I was a kid. I was like, shit, if hell's like that, I don't want to go there.
Did you watch
Seems bad.
Alex Winter's documentary on the dark web?
No.
It's pretty interesting. He's really into it.
Yeah, what does he do?
He got really involved in technology and like researching the dark web and he's done a couple podcasts about it and he made a whole documentary about it.
Wait, give me like B and C, because to me, I just went from Bogus Journey to documentaries in the dark web. That's like the last time I heard of Alex Winter doing anything.
I think that's kind of like the last anyone heard of him doing
stuff. Oh, okay. So he's just been doing his thing and then reappeared.
Yeah. And Keanu Reeves has just been not aging.
Well, that's true too, yeah.
Well, that's because he's plugged
into the... Did you guys remember Freaked?
Oh, I remember Freaked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's after Bogus Journey.
That was after.
I don't remember that.
Freaked is Alex Winter's only movie that he directed, I think.
And it's pretty over the top, like wacky.
Yeah,
had a lot of the
prosthetics.
It's
like it's like The Dark Backward. You ever see that with Judd Nelson?
No,
it's kind of like it's a freak show movie. Basically.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
Both of them are just kind of like really odd.
So he's getting into some weird stuff already.
Yeah, and then I had a friend who was close with him. I think actually maybe it was the guy who did the first Steak Mountain website. Like he helped me design it, and he was friends with them. And he basically said that he was just poor, living in like a really small apartment in the Lower East Side.
Really?
Just like looking for work, trying to do voiceover work and things like that.
Huh.
So
that's sad.
Yeah. No, it is.
It's amazing to think the people who are probably still making money on Bill and Ted's and Alex Winter's not.
Yeah. And then that talk that comes up every couple of years where they're like, let's do another Bill and Ted. He's probably like, that would be amazing. Yes.
Keanu's
please.
Like, no. I'm plugged into the Matrix.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. I'm making like just weird kung fu movies for no reason and whatever else. I mean, obviously the John Wick movies, but you know.
John Wicks are pretty entertaining.
They're great.
They're fun.
The second one's a little too long, but in general, they're very tight, well done DTV movies. They're like movies that you would see on like Showtime in the 90s that would never get a theatrical debut. You know, they'd always end up, they'd have like Don the Dragon Wilson like, you know, Jeff Speakman or people like that in it. And then you'd be like, oh, cool. I'm just going to sit at him and just watch this dude fuck up people. That's all it is.
I'm going to take a shot in the dark here because I think you're the type of guy who can answer this question eloquently.
Our guest today, we haven't introduced yet.
Yeah, I thought we were going to introduce it in the intro.
You can just fade in.
So anyways. The person talking who isn't me or Benny or Brad is Chris Norris.
Hey! Yes.
Yay.
AKA Steak Mountain, AKA...
That's it.
Been guy very, wearing all black.
Very patient
with
our rambling.
And the pressing thing I'm dying to know from Chris Norris is, can I please have a Die Hard 1-6 ranking of personal favorites?
Which one has Franco Nero in it? The second one?
Yes.
Okay. So two.
Two. Okay. Icicle in the Eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Franco Nero. If Franco Nero is your bad guy, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Then two. One, because it is a very lean, but strangely long classic.
Yeah.
It's really weirdly long.
It has a part in the film you think they're getting to the end.
Yeah.
And then there's quite a bit more.
And you're like, oh, wait.
We're still going.
So they actually ganked what would be just the future model for action films, where you're like,
right.
Why is this action film 2 hours and 20 minutes long? Yeah. Doesn't need to be.
They left the Lethal Weapon model.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Just 88 minutes, we're good.
A bit. I know. They had it down.
You know, but...
All right, so we got 2-1.
Well, and I don't rank those new ones at all because they're just,
they're not in,
they're not in
really. You
know? Yeah. Because what good are they?
I gotta be honest. I felt Live Free or Die Hard.
Is that the Jai Courtney one?
Was in Russia. I'm not sure who the actor is.
Just well, who's when? Which one has got Justin Long in it?
That was the one before.
Okay,
which right. I hate. That is clearly number six. For
yeah,
me,
yeah,
like,
that's
by far
pretty bad. Yeah,
but I'd like you to visit Live Free or Die Hard, the newest
right.
of them. I believe it's six.
Yeah,
straight in within about 5 minutes, John McClane is in Russia.
Nice.
He has already met his estranged son, and he is already in conflict with basically every armed Russian in Russia, mm-hmm. and says his catch line in the first 5 minutes, which was, I think I'm not even supposed to be here today, or something.
One of those ones.
He threw it out, and this all happens within the first five, and I think it's under 90 minutes.
That's good.
I'd like you to visit it.
I'll look at it because Jai Courtney's a hard one for me, who's the other guy in the movie, because they keep on trying to make that dude
he's
something.
He's the Avatar guy, right?
No, that's Sam Worthington.
Oh, Worthington, yeah.
Jai Courtney's another Australian actor who they keep on giving chances to that you're like, well, who are you?
Just stop. Wait, what do what? I know that guy from?
He was in Suicide Squad as the beer-drinking idiot in that, one of the Suicide Squad. And then past that... I don't know. I've seen him in things where I'm just like, who's this fool?
Just stop.
Like,
stop. Is he handsome? Is
no, he's actually like handsome, but he's like potato handsome. Like what you can see inside of it is a future where he's going to struggle with weight, like Russell Crowe style.
Oh, right.
You know, where you're like,
he's pushing already. Yeah.
But right now he's fit. Shirt comes off. Sure. You're like, oh,
for now.
Okay. For yeah. now.
Once the 30s hit.
But he's got a potato head.
Oh,
so you're just like, oh, I see where this is going.
You're just waiting.
And I'm so sorry, son. I hope that you make your money or at least get a good Australian TV job.
Yeah, right.
When you just fail hair and they're like, you're just making action films there.
I think you could get away with like a poor body in Australia better
of
than you could
you
in
can.
The States. Like,
that's
aren't they
England's
the poorliest
like that too.
Country in the world now? Australia?
I don't know.
Portliest.
Yes, Portliest.
They can't be worse than us.
No, I think they won.
They can't
won
be
now.
Worse than us.
I think they won the last
really?
Time I saw. Is your Google machine working? Can you Google the portliest country in the world?
It's like, and then, sorry, Australia.
I'm Googling the country in the world.
I'm pretty sure it's Australia now. I mean, they do eat like shit. I've been there a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically some version of British food.
Yep.
So they still eat like crap. Come on.
This is really weird.
Wait, what came up?
Cook Islands.
Where the hell is that?
Cook Islands is a portliest place in the world.
It's number one. Country? It's islands. That's probably owned by what? The Dutch or something?
Followed by Qatar, Palau, Nauru.
All right, what list did
Kuwait?
You stumble upon? Stop it.
This is not the list.
Yes.
Oh, it's PH. No, I'm just kidding.
Wait, what's PH?
This says United States is eight.
Wow.
Yeah, we're definitely top 10.
I mean, you got guys like Jonah. Jonah's just very fit.
He's svelte.
You think he's just skinny, and then he posts those yoga pictures, and you're like, oh, shit, Jonah's got some cut.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, little... I mean, it's all yoga. You know, it's a lot of arm balancing, a lot mm-hmm. of jumping around.
Did you ever think mm-hmm. you were going to be ripped in your life? I bet you did.
I mean, I'm not ripped like I don't have, like, a six-pack.
You're pretty cut up. You look great, bud.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. work's been slow, so I have a lot of time to dedicate towards self-care.
That's what the holidays are for.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
And Chris, think.
Yes.
Speaking of dedicating a lot of time to something.
Oh, here we go.
You just
nice
wrote a book called Hunchback 88.
Yes.
And you've been working on it for a very long time because I feel like you sent me a draft of this years ago.
I did.
Can you talk about it a little bit?
Okay, so Hunchback 88 is a horror book, because novel doesn't sound right, that I've been writing for, it's on and off for 6-7 years. When was 2009?
Oh, like 8 years ago.
Okay.
Nearly wait. Nine.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's 2018.
2007? Yeah.
Wait.
2007 was 11 years ago.
No, okay, so not that long. 2000, what did I say? 2000,
you said nine.
2009.
Yeah, 2009. Around 2009, it started.
Okay.
And it was more me just fucking around with just ideas and just writing things you would never show anybody. But I love movies, which I've probably talked about on here a million times before. So it started like just like movie ideas that I had been writing down. And then I kind of kept that stuff. And then years later, after I worked at Kink for a little while and I'd kind of experienced writing pieces for that and coming up with scenarios, I was like, why don't I just take a crack at writing scripts? Scripts I'll never show anybody, movies I'll never make because I don't have any ambition, right? So, you know, just like, can I do it? What kind of movie would I write if I wrote a horror movie, or if I wrote a Western or a thriller or anything?
So it was really just like a self challenge.
Yeah, it was. And I had this job when I came back to New York where I didn't have to do anything all day. Similar to almost how what I have now, but it was very different because I was in a room alone just waiting for photo shoots to happen so that I could pack gear. So they just were like, okay, come in at 9 and leave at 5 and we don't care what you do.
Right.
You know, you just got to be here. And then they weren't busy. So there'd be whole stretches of, I just come in every day and be like, all right, I guess I'll watch a movie and work on some fucking shitty.
Sounds like the best
job ever. It was amazing. You know, I'll work on a movie. I'll watch a movie. I'll work on some fucking shitty Against Me art and then maybe I'll write. You know what I mean? And so that's how, like, I spent 3 years doing that. Like, and when I came back to New York after San Francisco in 2012. So I had all this time to, like, really kind of just be like, okay, well, these are like office hours, like Steak Mountain office hours. And so then I was like, all right, well, I wrote. And I wrote like about 5 movies. And then in that, I was like, I'll never make these. And I did the thing where I was just like, well, are they any good?
Are we talking about length here? Like, these are full length.
Yeah, like 90 minute
features.
You know, features. Yeah. Wow. You know, which, like, but probably poor in their quality. But I took like one of them and I started doing just like the rounds of submitting them to places where people read them and things like that. Sundance, Slam Dance, the Nichols thing that happens with the Oscars, just to see. You know, it was like,
sure,
to it, you know, are these actually any good or am I actually just dreaming? You know? And the things that came back were what I thought would be typical, whatever, just stop directing in your script. Because I was just writing for me, so I was writing full descriptions. You know, right. Like if I was to direct it, I'd put everything in it because these are all my ideas. Yeah, this person would walk in at this time and all this dumb shit that you don't put in scripts, really.
Sure.
You know, you don't need to do that because you're hopefully just going to sell it, buy a house and walk the fuck away, you know, yeah. And hope you get another job. So anyways, I took one of those eventually because people came back and they're like, the writing is fine actually, but it's either too violent or too sexual, or you don't have a 3-act structure, because I realized that as much as I love movies, I don't really give a fuck about a 3-act narrative.
Mm.
You know what I mean? For me, like, a movie's a free fall. They kick you off the ledge and once you hit the bottom, that's the end.
Right.
I don't care. If somebody doesn't have a story, but the visuals look good, or there's something that is driven inside of it that makes you just want to watch,
right.
I don't care if there's a climax. I don't care if I get a resolution
right.
to a mystery, or, you know what I mean?
Tarantino.
If the structure. Yeah, you're right. You know, he fucks with that whole thing. You know what I mean? So very rarely, like, do I really care. If I get something that's classic in 3 acts and it's amazing, that's amazing. It's awesome. It's like a pop song. I can't write a pop song, but I admire pop music because I can't do it. Mm. I look at it and I'm like, that's the great diamond.
Sure.
Because I look at a fucking guitar and I see my car keys. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And just a bunch of feedback. I'm like, that's sick. But I could never write a pop song. So I always like fetishize that. So a 3-act structure movie, if you're good at it, man, that's amazing. Because you understand that. For me, I didn't want to push myself into it. So they were basically like, that's what the reviews were. So fuck all that. I took one, which was this slasher film that I wrote. Where I'd had this idea to take a slasher film and cut it down to its bare essentials and then organize those as a 3-act almost. That was like my 3-act. So you meet the idiot kids and then there's a lot of running and then everyone dies. And that's how I structured the slasher. It was like a postmodern slasher film or something stupid sure. like that. You know, it's just like, oh, it's just an organization of events. Because you never get to know those kids anyway, so why the fuck would I bother with characterization? You're just going to know that they're young, they fuck, and they're probably at a campground or on a beach. Or, you know what I mean? Just like, boom. Yeah. And then have a bunch of scenes of that where it's like almost like the central action is the middle because it's a lot of chasing. And then it was just a whole series of vignettes of them being killed. And that was the movie. Right? So then I was like, this is actually pretty all right. I like this. So then I started taking it apart and writing it as a like delving deeper into it. And then I like kind of wrote what is essentially like Hunchback 88 has a central piece, which is this slasher film that doesn't exist. And then I wrote on either side of it, 2 layers of narrative. So the book essentially goes, it doesn't really make any sense. And it's really hard to describe because I made it purposely hard for myself to write and then try to sell to people, you know? So it essentially starts at a place and just goes, it does the free fall through layers, 3 layers of story, hits a bottom, and then you climb back out and you revisit those 3 layers.
Okay.
And that's how it works.
Cool.
So so essentially it starts in a room in a house, in an abandoned house in, you know, the woods somewhere. And then from there, somebody slips on a banana and it becomes something else. Actually, somebody literally slips on a banana in the book. It's a visual, pictorial part of the book where I put in pictures of somebody slipping on a banana. Huh. And then it becomes something else. And then in that something else, there's talk about reading, essentially going, a prostitute goes to visit a John and they are to read a story. And the story is essentially the slasher film. It's a script. Huh. So they're essentially reading the script.
Cool.
And then from there, it kind of just moves out. That's pretty much the bare bones of it. And
it's like anti-pop. Anti-pop book.
Yeah, for sure.
I like that.
And I did a lot of writing and retooling on it, and I didn't actually expect to really show it to anybody. I sent it to Jonah a couple of years ago just to be like, well, Jonah writes. Jonah's the only person I fucking know that writes other than Dan Ozzie, and Dan Ozzie's just too mean. You know, right?
Yes.
So I'd get something honest from Jonah if he had the moment, but not something that would just be like, this fucking sucks. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Just kidding, Dan. You have
no,
the
you're pretty mad.
Yeah. Like, this doesn't sound like pub.
Oh, shit, Dan. So
Shaolin.
So I didn't really actually think I was going to really do anything with it. It was, again, another almost like another exercise. Because I don't actually read a lot of books. I don't have time. I watch a lot of movies and I work. That's what I like to do. So but I love writing. You know what I mean? And I love interesting writing or weird writing or writing that is either legendary for being difficult, like something as corny as Naked Lunch, or things that were happening in France in the 50s and 60s, like the New Novel, where people were just taking narrative and flattening it out and making things really hard to read. You know, like this guy Alain Robbe Grier or Marguerite Duras, who are writers who were just like, yeah, that's cool, you guys can write a novel, but can you write a novel that's really confusing that nobody wants, but we all pretend we're really smart, that you think that we're super smart and that everybody buys into it and become national heroes, which is essentially what the new novel happened with the new novel in France in the 50s and 60s.
Interesting.
And some of those people ended up making really amazing movies, like this Robbe Grier guy.
I don't know much about that. Like, what did those people do to deconstruct stories that it made it difficult to read?
It's almost like there is no like the basic idea of the novel is a narrative driven thing with characters and an understanding of space and things like that. So a guy like Alain Robbe Grier he was more about memory and taking memories. And then his work is really interesting because, and I know I get this wrong, and I know anybody who knows this stuff is probably like, go fuck yourself, kid.
I'd say a small percentage of our listeners would know.
It's true.
I just say go for it.
You got a couple
you're
corny
say
listeners.
Great.
They will know who Dan Ozzie is, but they will not know. They will not know this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
No offense.
He was a huge S&M head, and he would write these like kind of like from a male dom's perspective of sexual encounters with female slaves. But they were always based around memory, and they're always really violent and over sexual and strange. And he would basically put you in a place, be like, okay, we're at a beach. And then he would take you along the beach with too much description of the beach and nobody on the beach. And then he would all of a sudden introduce somebody. But then all of a sudden he'd go back to the beginning of the beach, and he would tell you that the beach is in a snapshot. And that snapshot is in the hand of the person who he was just talking about. And he would just this thing where it's a puzzle that doesn't need to be solved.
Gotcha.
But gives you all the puzzle pieces. And it's just like one of those things that they're demanding reads, you know, but at the end you're like, oh yeah, I'm glad I read that. That was cool. You
is that kind of like maybe like David Lynch style? Like
sure, almost? Something like that. Yeah, that's a good equivalent of it, you know, or like, yeah, that's a great equivalent. You know what I mean? And Robbe Grier made movies that were like that too in the 60s. I made this movie called Trans-Europe Express. That's really interesting. A bunch of stuff. And they're all kind of like that, you know? They're all these like memory movies, you know, where just like you don't know if it's reality, you don't know if it's a dream, and they're very just nice to watch. So anyways, that was like one of my main inspirations even for Hunchback was like, all right, well, I'm going to take it and I'm going to start twisting it and I'm going to rewrite it. And I never expected to really show it to anybody past just friends, you know, like, oh, hey, is this cool? Do you like this? I mean, whatever. Fuck, my wife hasn't even read it yet. You know what I mean? And she's, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
she's
just
knows that when she's like playing Xbox, I've just been on my phone because I've literally almost edited and wrote the whole thing on a phone.
Wow.
No way.
Yeah.
That sounds like infuriating.
Sounds painful.
But it's really easy. You know what I mean? Because it's just, you're close to it. And it just was like a good way to work.
No migraines?
No. You know, and I just scroll through and then I'd scroll through randomly, pick a spot and be like, oh, I'm going to rewrite this. You know, and I would just do that. And I did this thing obsessively.
I'll enjoy finger cancer in 10 years.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. I don't need them anyways. Have you seen this? Steak Mountain Network. So that's not good. So
Chris, come on, we got to stop this. Seriously.
What? You've seen the Against Me records? Come on, be honest.
You've done art for my band. I think it's great.
Your band is different because I like you. I don't like Against Me. Laura's always the whipping girl. And these things. Sorry, Laura. You're not listening anyways. So
she's been a guest.
Yeah, no.
But maybe definitely. Not an avid listener. Do you think Laura's ever listened to Going Off Track? I wonder.
Maybe.
Should we slip something in right now to just see?
It's in her feed
a lot. She might listen to yours.
She might.
You don't think?
No.
100%?
No.
Then let's say something. Let's say something
Laura,
fun.
If you're listening to this.
Yeah.
Send a postcard to Benny.
I love a postcard.
Send a postcard to Benny.
Handwritten. She doesn't have my address, and I'm not going to say it on here.
Handwritten, because so. It's Benny. Guess what anthem.
Good one.
Well, zing. So Chris, do you speak... Go ahead.
What were you saying?
Well, I was going to say you also have illustrations in the book.
Yeah, there's stuff in the book.
You didn't do those on your phone, I'm assuming.
No, naturally, yes. There's not a whole lot. Is there a lot? No, there's not. There's a few.
Okay.
So anyways, I was obsessed about just kind of doing this thing, and it was almost like a nightly exercise to just kill time before watching a movie or killing time at work or something like that. And this kid from Canada named Matt, he runs this imprint called Permanent Sleep Press, and his deal is he deals with, because I feel like this is like a really common thing now, you see a lot of like older hardcore guys being like, oh, I'm a writer now. You know, I'm gonna write books.
Yeah.
Like, you know, or guys involved in the scene in some way. There's this kid named Max Morton who lives in LA. He was in Cold Cave for a minute. You know, he's like an OG like New York hardcore guy.
Sure.
You know, he's a very interesting writer, but that there's a kind of this small movement. You know, and they always like the darker side of writing, like Peter Sotos or just, you know, whatever, things like that. They're not writing like sick romantic novels. They're writing like fucked up shit, dude. You know, so.
Because no one wants to get paid.
No.
You got to write them paperbacks, get the Walmart.
I know.
Next.
Yeah, when I sell this thing. when I sell the rights for it, I'm going to be like, and next I'm going to write a romantic comedy. Actually, that'd be pretty sick. But. but anyways, so
see the wheels cranking.
Yeah, and I'm like, I could do that.
Maybe Sandra Bullock.
Harder than a pop song.
I mean, I
think it's easy.
I love romantic comedies actually because
so do I.
And musicals,
really?
I do.
Yeah, I love them.
A well-made romantic comedy is super hard to execute.
Yep,
I really do. And I think a good one is pretty special.
I saw Big Sick. Have you seen that movie?
Great.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought that was good.
Yeah. Great.
I get all the feels from a good romantic comedy.
Me as well. And for me, the romantic comedy and the musical are my favorite genres because they're the most removed for me. So if movies are about entertainment and taking you out of your reality, there's nothing more far removed than watching West Side Story or While You Were Sleeping. Mm-hmm. You know, because when I think about life, I think about stabbing people.
Right.
You know, so when I watch a violent movie, I'm like, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Right.
I'm with you. But if I'm watching something like a musical or a romantic comedy, it is actually a full removal from reality.
But that's interesting. Now, do you think you're attracted to that because that's like sort of a utopian vision of things that you wish actually were?
No.
Or
it's just
like
pure fantasy.
Like, or it's just like this doesn't exist in any context, so I can lose myself in it.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
Yeah. No, I'm never pining for a better life. Life is what you got. That's right. It. You know what I mean? If you can, like, my motto is, you know, hope for nothing, and if something, well, that's cool. You know, like that was awome. Great.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, but for the most part, you're just like, this is what I got. So you got to make it happen.
Well, based on that topic, I saw a quote you said in an old interview that you're not interested in people past observing them.
That's actually funny because I had this conversation with my wife
the
other day.
I found really, really interesting. And you know, myself, I've felt the same way in a lot of ways, like always a step out from whatever was going on.
Absolutely.
Always like, even if I was so included in the thing I was in, I still felt like I was on the outside looking in. I still do.
Yeah.
It's just some people see things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because of it, I think some people start to become like little amateur students of the human condition and something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that, like, as you're getting older, is is staying as strong as it used to be, or Absolutely. Is it something that's like you're gaining a different perspective as you get older?
No, I think that it's grown even more, but the problem is the game has always been to never really play that hand. Like, I have an accessible personality on a day-to-day. I can do small talk. I can do all that bullshit. Mm-hmm. Polite. I can have sure. friends. You know what I mean? Like, but the problem is as you get well-worn into that observation and that distance and that being comfortable in that distance, and the more you do it, you have to, it's just more of a struggle. The struggle is more keeping your public persona intact and accessible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that's actually what the real worry has always been, is like, am I becoming too detached?
Right.
You know, because I got to still be able to function. I don't like people who can't function.
Sure.
Or
sure.
It's not that I don't like them. It's just that people who can't function in society are always people who complain about not being able to function in society.
Mm.
You know, and that's fucking
boring.
So you
find that more as like weakness.
Yeah, that's a weakness. That's absolutely a weakness. Like, find something you're comfortable with, a personality you're comfortable with, in public, to be able to talk to people and not creep them out.
Yeah.
And use it, you know, because then what that personality just becomes is just, it becomes a comfortable thing. You don't get fucking social anxiety. I don't get social anxiety. Huh. I just don't want to go places.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like I'm like, people see a show and they're like, oh my God, I don't want to go because I have crippling social anxiety. I just don't want to go because I don't
like
music.
You don't have social anxiety because people aren't judging the real actual character of you?
That's actually a really good question. No, I just don't have social anxiety because I don't care enough to worry about that even.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
For me, it's always just like, I just don't want to go somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I can go places.
And the only thing forcing you to stay in the social kind of world you are is just like a vision that the alternative is just like weakness and you can't function within society. Like,
which
that.
Is ridiculous.
So it's just pragmatic.
Yeah.
So like,
it's just, yeah.
So you chose a personality out of pragmatism.
Absolutely.
What?
And that became what essentially is my personality.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, when you put it like that, I'm like, is this what everyone does?
Yeah, I would
think
so.
At a young age, and you just saw it in a different way.
And some people are bad at it, and that's, you can't fault them. You know what I mean? And,
sure.
And I complain about people who can't function in society, but are trying.
Right.
And that's fine too. That's great.
Yeah.
But you're just fucking bad at it.
When did this kind of like start for you? Because I imagine when you were playing in Combat Wounded Veteran, like, you guys were touring, you were going to shows. I mean, at what point were you just like, I don't like going out. I don't need this thing.
It's not even actually like that I don't like going out. I love going out. I just don't actually like going out and in what I'm involved with at the, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, this is like basically Stake Mountain and being involved in punk and hardcore and whatever. That's it. That's going to chase me forever.
Yeah, you almost seem embarrassed by it.
I am 100% embarrassed by it. Yes, huh. Absolutely. Definitely. But also, I know that I'm in a really cool, interesting position, and I've got to do things that people wish that they could do that I look at and go fuck yourself.
Right.
This is the dumbest shit I've ever been involved in. Why the fuck? But also, it's given me great opportunities.
Right.
No idiot would want to release a fucking book, you know, if I wasn't Stake Mountain. You know what I mean? Or maybe they would, but I wouldn't have as easy a time to all of a sudden just have some kid be like, have you ever written a book? And I'd be like, that's funny because I have a book.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he's like, cool, can I see it? You know, and then be like, yeah, I'll do it. And it was so easy, that transaction, because I'm not just fucking Joe Hardcore who's never done anything. I'm an idiot who's had great opportunities and sitting with you guys in a basement talking about all this dumb shit. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, and we're having a good time, I think, right?
Yeah,
well,
I'm having a good time.
I mean, that being said, I wonder, like, so what is the, it sounds like the impetus for you to make anything public would be different than other people. Like, when I release music, I feel a need to be validated by other people's opinions.
Sure.
I do. I want other people to hear it and other people to think it's good, and then I feel good.
Yeah.
That's part of the experience for me.
Absolutely.
Is that part of the experience for you?
I don't have
all?
A drive like that. So I make fun of artists for saying things like, I gotta create, but I understand I understand it.
Right, right.
But for
just
me,
don't
like,
don't be so drama.
Yeah, man. You know, but like, artists are like that. You
sure.
know, musicians are like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Poets are like that. People
gotta
are like,
you know,
like, oh, I gotta do this thing. If I don't do it, I go crazy. And I'm like, I don't have that feeling. There are whole stretches of time where, I mean, I haven't made, and you know, like, other than working on this stuff for Hunchback and getting things upright with some visuals and stuff like that, I didn't do anything for months because I can just not do things and it doesn't bother me.
Right.
You know, now I do talk about being obsessed with writing this book and I did a lot of that. So maybe in the past couple of years of not doing a whole lot of fucking art, you know, was based around I was doing something else and I just didn't think I was doing something else because it was actually really an enjoyable experience to fuck with this book that I thought no one was going to see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I don't release things because, yeah, for validation or that I think people need to see it. I don't even really, I don't even give a fuck about reputation. Like, I release things that I know are bad, that I think, like, I didn't put enough effort into or that I think are weak, but I also know people's taste isn't very good.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, you know, so I think, like, you know what? If people liked that, then they'll probably like this.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I mean, that could be the case with Hunchback. You know what I mean? This thing could be, like, fucking whatever, but, you know what I mean? Somebody wanted to do it, so I was just like, oh, I mean, that sounds all right.
Sure.
I mean, it's better than being annoyed that I had to lay out somebody's lyrics on a record, you know what I mean? Or something like that. You know what I mean? So
right. But why do you have to do any of it though?
I don't have to do any of it. And truthfully, a lot of Steak Mountain stuff happens now because I'm poor.
Right.
You know what
so
I mean?
It's just a real function.
Yeah. It's like actually a real function. You know what I mean? At some point in time, there was a deal with Steak Mountain where I thought it was going to be a little bit bigger than it was. And I could have parlayed it into a career, even if it was a career I wasn't interested in, because if you have a fucking job, you probably don't like it anyways.
What so kind well have of opportunities job. Did you have that could have turned that in?
I think especially with the when Against Me signed to Sire and I was part of that camp,
right.
I thought, okay, I might be able to parlay this into something else.
More
because they're getting
more bigger jobs with
you know,
other bands.
Exactly.
Sure.
There's a visibility there.
Right, right, right.
You know, so I thought, okay, well, maybe I'd be able to turn this into a thing. And like that never really happened at because of what I realized is that I'm also like not really that easy to work with, you know, I mean, just outright because for me, the work doesn't matter. What is more entertaining for me inside of the work is being difficult. Like that's the entertainment for me.
Yeah.
Like the performance is more interesting than the making the work.
I understand.
You know, so and that's kind of always how it was like that in combat. Sure. You know, and I was just, you know, it was just for me, like I didn't give a fuck about what we did. It was the fact that I could take a microphone and hit a kid with it.
Born dissenter.
And that was,
Born dissenter.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, yeah sure. Yeah. So like that's the entertaining part. So that's what keeps me interested in Steak Mountain is when I'm like, oh, I can be difficult here.
Right.
It's harder to be difficult with like somebody like Jonah, you know, or even now with Against Me, just because it's just Laura's just like, shut the fuck up, dude.
Yeah. I mean, have you found your, I mean, it sounds like a great and unique and awesome position to be in, almost like Andy Kaufman like, but
sure,
it sounds unsustainable.
It's 100% unsustainable.
Yeah.
And there'll never be a way that this will ever turn into a job for me.
Right.
You know? So I'm just going to run this into the ground.
But
probably deeper.
Well, I feel like last time you were on the podcast, I felt like you were even talking about retiring Steak Mountain altogether.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I've been working towards. But that's also like a conversation I've been having with myself forever. And what ends up really happening is that, well, I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I don't want to do this. It's not about ego for me. And it's not about people liking the things or things like that. For me, Steak Mountain has always just been this thing that I did. And I was able to abuse people in a fun kind of PG way. You know what I mean? And then also be serious with people because like the work I've done for you, Jonah, has been, that was like, that's real work to me. You know what I mean? Cause we're friends and whatever,
right.
You know what I mean? And we're friends in a way that like is different than when I say like, Laura is my friend, you know what I mean? Where it's just like, we're more just, Laura is just my boss and we share a lot of the same tastes, you know, and it's 10 plus years together working, you know? So it's just like, oh, okay. It's like a shorthand, but we're not like friends. Like we don't can hang out when she comes to town. I don't go to those shows.
Right.
And Laura
pays you, unlike me.
No, and that's the thing too. Like, and so it is a real job.
You pay but like, in other ways. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Really
but yeah. So I lost my train of thought. But yeah, that's essentially what Steak Mountain is that it's money,
right?
Not a whole lot of money these days, you know. But you know, it's just like I'm like any 40-year-old. You know, at this point in time in life, wasn't very successful and has like a mid-level job. I'm in hella debt.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so every stupid $1,000 is like, cool. That's, awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not that much in debt anymore. And sure, I had to do this record, but also I didn't really try hard.
Right.
You know, like, sure. You know, so, and like for me, that's what kind of makes the most sense about Steak Mountain now is that it's never going to be a thing. Now, maybe it will. Who knows? But also with this shitty attitude, are you kidding me? Absolutely not. I'll just take a day job, you know, and have time to watch movies, you know, and it's
Sure.
But you have such a like...
So probably not going to have kids.
No, absolutely not. No. I applaud everyone who can.
Sure.
Because the world is garbage. And that effort is a great effort. It's awesome if you can do it. And it's also if you're in a position to do it. For me, I see myself as somebody who couldn't afford it. You know?
Right.
And I don't want to do it. And that unconditional love from a sprout to an adult isn't that important to me.
I mean, people literally smoke crack and raise kids. You don't need money.
You don't need to, but
you
figure it out. I don't like the high wire act of it.
Sure.
I got other things to do. I've got thousands of movies I could think of that I could watch instead, mm-hmm. which I'd rather do.
It's true. I can understand it because there are times when I'm grinding away with kids and doing that stuff where I'm like, Jesus Christ, we're all pieces of dust floating around right now. Mm-hmm. You are just like me. We're all going to be completely insignificant and not that long. And I literally think that in front of my kids that this just doesn't matter at all. Like, and it's sad sometimes.
Ben, you're turning. This is what I always said on the podcast for years, and now like,
no, it's just real, man.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Like, there are conscious decisions to doing that stuff. You know what I mean? There really are. And it's not always fucking romantic. It basically came down to a decision for me. Do I want to be the old man with a beard at the coffee shop writing books and continuing to do stuff like that? Or do I want to be the old man surrounded by kids and grandkids? That dude seemed happier to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm going to go that way. But it wasn't some like youthful thing where I was like, this is always what I was going to do. It was a real just choice. It was an actual choice. Laid in front of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A fork in the road.
Yeah.
If you will. I just decided to do that because I love just fucking torturing myself. I haven't been in the movies in 2.5 years.
See,
so
that would, I would,
yeah.
My head would come off.
You want to, can I embarrass myself? The last movie I saw in the movies was when my son was in the hospital. I snuck away to go see the last Star Wars. Like
Force Awakens.
Yeah. Right. You know, 2.5 years ago. And I went during the afternoon. I rolled a little pinner for the parking lot, had mm-hmm. a whole thing set up. I had like 3 hours. I was very excited. I smoked in the parking lot. I get up there, sold out.
Of course.
And I'm like, I'm seeing a fucking movie. I'm like, I created this time. I'm
sure,
going.
Sure.
What was next? Krampus.
Oh.
So I can safely say the last film I saw in the movie theaters was Krampus.
Now I'm going to say about Krampus.
It's not bad. It was way darker and way more brutal than I thought it was going to be.
The movie the Krampus team made before that was this movie called Trick or Treat, which was actually a pretty good little
scary
Halloween
movie.
Yeah.
Scary movie.
Yeah, it was cool.
I found Krampus freakier than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. And Universal's really doubled down on it. They have like, if you go to Halloween Horror Nights, they have a Krampus like haunted house that you
was
go
there
into.
Krampus 2 coming then?
I don't think so.
Pretty much everyone died in that movie.
Yeah, and I think it made like $5 and a little bit of streaming money.
Yeah, it didn't do well.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Brad, as someone else with children, what's the last movie you saw?
What did
I guess
I've got a 10-year-old and I have a 6-year-old who's not afraid of anything.
What do you see, the Minions?
I went and saw the Star Wars, the new Star Wars.
Oh, you did?
Which I really like.
With both of them?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The six-year-old is pretty fearless.
I can't wait.
It's hilarious because I've got friends who have kids of similar ages and they can't take them to anything. They like...
Oh, really? Because they're scared?
They're just scared of everything. Scared of the Minion movies.
What? What's in there?
I saw the last Minion movie.
You saw what?
I saw the last Minion movie. I was on a date. This was a while ago, I guess. And
you guys want to see the Minions?
Hey,
well, no.
It's not usually, you're dragging them.
It's not legal. You know, you shouldn't talk about this on the podcast.
I was supposed to go see one of those superhero movies. I sound so old.
One of them superhero movies.
Iron or Super or Spider.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about that. I was supposed to go.
Something, man.
Typical move. Didn't buy tickets in advance. Got there. Sold out. And it was one of the Minions, two or three, something. And I was like...
Despicable Minions.
It was Despicable Me. It was one of those.
Right.
Yeah, and I went and I was like, so this is the only thing that we can go to? Do you want to go? And I felt like she was like, I guess. We're here. And it was not good.
See, she wanted an executive decision out of you. And you were just like, let's go see Minions.
I was like, I care about this as much as I care about some superhero movie I don't know the context of.
Right.
To me, I don't really want
to
see any of this stuff.
And if it were
just
up to you, what would you have been going to see? Something super deep and cool? Or
Yeah, like what's an ideal Jonah date night movie?
Like what
you can pull from the past.
Wait, date movie question. And yeah, movie question. Would be two different things though.
No, date movie.
Yeah, date movie.
Like so Jonah, you're blank slate and a woman's like, I'd like to see this movie. What makes her the perfect woman? Like what movie is she requesting
nice.
To see?
Nice. It could be anything.
Krampus?
You can pull from like, oh, we're going to see a revival of Mean Streets. Yeah. Anything. Doesn't
Chariots
matter.
Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
What is it?
Yeah.
What makes her go, I'm going to marry her?
I don't know why this is popping into my head, but my first instinct is one of my favorite movies growing up, and it was a movie starring Steven Seagal. It's called Hard to Kill.
Oh, it's not a bad movie.
Jonah.
That's your date movie.
I love that joke. That's the answer I want.
I think you just went up quite a few notches in Christmas.
That's really good.
You got Kelly
so if homegirl, wants to see Hard to Kill, yeah, you should marry her.
Marry.
That's it. Marry. Done.
Any girl that wants to see that little fucking nubbin ponytail on that guy.
There, you don't like Seagal?
There's so many good one-liners in that movie. The one where he after jumps a gun in the guy's mouth and knocks out his teeth, and then he points a gun at his dick and shoots it, and he goes, I missed. I never missed. Must have been smaller than I thought.
Oh, Chris, by the way, the one-liner from the new Die Hard.
Uh-huh.
I'm supposed to be on vacation.
That's right.
That was it.
That's the one.
That was it. Yeah. He introduced it within 90 seconds.
That's
it.
Amazing.
Was there. It was
supposed
great.
To be on vacation.
How about this one? Can you name the three sports movies nominated for Best Picture or that won Best Picture?
One Best Picture.
One Best Picture.
That wasn't Moneyball.
Not Moneyball.
Sports.
It was The Natural.
Nope.
No?
Didn't win it.
With Newman, didn't win?
Didn't. It was Redford.
What about Field of Dreams?
Oh, it's Redford. Yeah, you're right. Thank you.
No. Nominated.
Rudy?
No.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I don't know.
What about the one about...
The Sandlot. I mean, come on. Little
Big
Friday
Night Lights?
No.
Well, does Chariots of Fire count?
It does.
Okay.
That's one. Okay. Chariots of Fire.
What about the one...
That's why I was doing that song.
Yeah.
What was the one with the guy with... the guy that got Lou Gehrig's disease? What was that film?
It wasn't that. Let's not get into Lou Gehrig's disease. Shit,
whatever that is, it's not that.
That. It's so sad.
Okay, what else?
I already said that. Like, I think my kids are going to turn to dust. Can I not talk about ALS right now? Right.
Not the Natural.
I'll give a hint.
Bull Durham.
The
no,
sport.
Bull Durham win
is the same sport for the next two.
So they're baseball movies?
No,
no.
Oh, they're both the same.
Once I give it up, you're going to know what they are. Should I give it up?
Do it.
Boxing.
I was thinking like the last.
See, because I don't ever think of boxing
the
as.
The last voice. You think that one? Damon Wayans, best actor.
So we're talking about the first Rocky.
Yep, first Rocky.
And Raging Bull.
Raging Bull.
Yeah.
Raging Bull.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Wow. Yeah, see, because what's funny about that, because I don't, like, my first thought when I hear boxing isn't sports, even though I know it is.
I know.
It's like, they're just, because it actually.
And then there's the question, is Kingpin a sports movie? Is
it's
Color of Money a sports movie?
No.
Is Days of Thunder a sports movie?
Is Dodgeball a sports movie?
Is Dodgeball a sports movie? Exactly. Yeah.
Just Days of Thunder.
Are bar sports sports?
No.
I mean, if sports are sports, then bar sports should be sports. But what's
games.
The difference? You know, like basketball is literally, like, let's say this sport means the world to me. But take it away. It's just men in shorts throwing a bouncy ball through a hoop. It's not like some crazy important thing. And someone throwing darts is someone throwing a mini arrow at a target. I don't know. It's the same shit. Just one is like more entertaining to watch than the other. Right?
Yeah.
What designates it? Golf's a sport. They just cruise around.
Sport.
I mean, those guys are jacked now. Tiger Woods changed it. If you want to be a look at some of the new golfers. They're
really
handsome and jacked. It's not the way it used to be.
Really?
Not Nicklaus.
No. Yeah. No bears anymore.
But it seems like everything's going in that direction,
it is.
Right?
Every sport is going to this, like, basically any athlete is at like the peak of nutrition, the peak of fitness, the peak of analytics. Like, they basically have broken everything down to a science in sports. And you can't get away with being like Mickey Mantle, like having a high life and a cigarette after a game anymore, because that guy just can't compete.
Even in baseball?
Even in baseball.
So maybe you've just defined it. You've defined what a sport is. Something that uses science and technology to perfect it.
But you don't think a professional billiards player is using technology to find angles and things? But I'm sure they are now. I know very little about billiards, but
yeah, it's math.
What is your best sport? If you had to put yourself on anything right now,
best sport?
Yeah,
to play?
Yeah.
Fuck, dude, I'm not good at any of them.
None of it.
No. Although no.
You shoot a little pool?
No.
You bowl a little?
No. I hate sports. Like, bowling is just more of like, it's like more of a nostalgic idea. Like, I think of bowling as the way I think of like, I think like bowling, and then somewhere in there I think of like the Ramones, because I feel like that's like a sport the Ramones would play.
They're connected.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's what I think about bowling. I think of Grease too. Right? Because they have the bowling song in it, and then the Ramones.
Because of where the Ramones are from, I would bet like good money at least half of that band's, their parents were in bowling leagues, like,
sure. Yeah,
where they grew up, they must have been in bowling leagues, their parents. I would put good money on
that. Yeah, that era, too.
Yeah, sure.
Ping pong.
Ping pong is your sport?
Ping pong.
Okay.
Wow. I could do that.
Your game?
Yeah.
You can
I
pong? Do
I don't
ping
think
pong.
I can even return a serve on ping pong.
It's literally tennis.
Yeah.
It's the same
but
thing.
But it's so fast.
I know. It's faster tennis. So why is it not a sport? Come on.
It is.
Do you think that growing up in Florida caused you to hate people?
No. No, I was like that as a kid. Actually, I would think...
Benny,
would
this is think, one of your best questions.
No, that's,
ever.
Yeah, that's a really good question, but this Florida made me understand the need for a personality. Growing up in Massachusetts made me hate people.
Gotcha.
I was an indoor kid through and through.
Okay.
And I just watched movies all the time, and I was probably a nice enough kid, but I just couldn't be bothered with going out. And the only thing that made me go out is when my parents moved us from a pretty all right middle class home in Salem, Massachusetts, to a fucking trailer park outside of Tampa. I had to go out. I was 13 and I had to go out. Like, I was like, fuck, I can't be in this fucking trailer anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was just easy because, like, I had to share a room with, like, a fat little brother, you know, in this fucking trailer park. You know what I mean? And I was just like, fuck, dude, I'm going out.
Sure.
You know? So I had to kind of, and then, you know, like, every single stereotype about a fucking trailer park in Florida is exactly
is
true.
It real?
Yeah. It's so real. So you got to, like, really be like, fuck. Holy shit, I really have to get up to speed.
I just imagine...
These kids drink?
Corona kids, bathing suits. You know,
yeah.
Can you paint that picture
a
little for me?
Like
preteen sex, lots of drinking and drugs.
Yeah, like what are high school kids doing at the trailer park?
All that. It's just a continuation. Like there's just a point in time where you just become cognizant of beer that you probably start drinking it in a
There's no
park.
Like good Christian kids in there who don't get like
all
that?
All those kids are bad.
Huh.
All the good Christian kids are bad. And this is the thing. This is the story I always give about...
All the good Christian kids are bad.
This is the story I always give about when
that.
I mean, I'm not a straight edge kid and I was never a straight edge kid, but I've never drank or smoked or did anything. I just was never involved in that scene.
Didn't identify with it.
And that scene, and that almost directly... involves my parents moving us to Florida, because in Massachusetts I was a stay-at-home kid and I just never really went out.
Sure.
So it wouldn't even dawn on me as like a 12-year-old or an 11-year-old to be like, I'm going to be a person who drinks beer
or smokes
cigarettes, even though my parents are hard drinking, hard smoking fucking goofballs. So when they moved us to this trailer park, it was such a shock to see these kids going so fucking hard that I was like, I hate all these kids and I never ever want to do this.
Wow.
And I just never did.
Huh.
You know, and then I was just like, oh, what's this stupid straight edge thing? So there's a thing that people
do? Why do you think you resented it so hard? Like right
I just
off.
Didn't, I just immediately, I still didn't like kids. Mm. You know what I mean? So I was just like, I didn't really like other kids. I think that's probably why I was just, you know, in
Massachusetts. So whatever the group was doing,
you're like,
probably just
gonna
go against.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
Fuck all you kids. Although I'm going to need some of you. So I'm going to be friends with some of you fucking scary little fuckers, you know, because you do run this trailer park, you miscreant. It's like fucking, what's that movie with Matt Dillon that he made when he was a kid?
Outsiders?
Yeah, not Outsiders. The other one,
Over
the Edge. No, Over
the
Edge. You know what I mean?
Love
it's like,
that one.
That's what it was like.
Man.
Those kids were like, just these like kids just running this trailer park.
Yeah.
Just teens.
Oh,
you know,
man.
And you'd get invited
you
over
never
a really...
locked your teachers and parents in the school.
No,
and
I wish
outside.
That'd be amazing. But the trailer park was so squirrely. You know, you'd get weird adults inviting you over to show you porn. You know, so you're like, you didn't realize it at 14. You're just like, oh, neat, pornography.
See, what are your parents like,
but this
though?
Woman's because old.
It's interesting to me that, like, such a young kid, because you know, you already realized, like, it seems like a very socially, even though you weren't deciding to be part of it, you know, the idea that, like, you knew you were outside of it, but needed to maintain some function with it and all this, it shows, like, a pretty serious social awareness of what's going on around you and probably a high level of intelligence, too. Like, what were your parents like? Like, did they...
Not that.
Yeah, like, where did that come from?
I have no idea, because my brother's an idiot, you know? And he's very smart. He's a very... Yeah, no, he's a very nice kid.
Did he slim down?
No. Chunk is... His name is Chunk.
Oh, okay.
It's been that way since he was 8.
Gotcha.
So...
Say no more.
Yeah. He's but he's a very nice kid, but
say
he's
no more,
not
please.
Bright. He's definitely been to community college 3 times and not made it out of community college.
2 for me.
You know, but
personally.
It's like he's a learning disability kid. Okay. So that's really the deal.
Right.
So he's a goof and a doofus and he's whatever and you know, whatever. But and I you know, I mean
clearly not gonna listen to Going Off Track.
No, I don't ever talk to him. So okay. He very rarely hears from his older brother. So yeah, actually, a minute now. So anyways, but... So Chunk's a doofus, and my parents are not really... I mean, they're Massachusetts people, so they think they're a lot smarter than they are, because that's the state.
Right.
Never has there been an accent that made a smart person sound so stupid than the Boston accent. You know? Sorry, Boston. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Or sorry, go fuck yourself. You know?
This is the easiest interview for me, too, dissing Florida and Boston. I'm like, it's easy. I can sit here all day.
Yeah.
This is super easy.
Dumb as shit. Argue. Boston. It's just the worst, man.
Good with this.
So you know, like, they're not smart people, but they think that they are.
Hang in there, Jonah. Hang in there. You're so uncomfortable. Jonah's good. Jonah is visibly...
You got a lot of ties to Boston or something?
No. I'm fine. I just, you know,
Jonah's a good guy.
You know, Yogi's gonna have to do after this? I think he's surrounded by so much negativity right now between me and you.
It's like a scary, sardonic sandwich
that you don't know what to do with.
I have my own demons, but yeah, I feel like I just know Chris well enough where it's like nothing he could say would surprise me.
No, that's true.
Gotcha. And the level of negativity would never.
But I'm relatively amiable.
Yes, you're fun to hang out. I love hanging out. You're fun to hang out with.
This is why I'm a little fascinated by this, because like. So the personality I have hears the things you're saying and goes, there's something else. There's something else here that you're not willing to give up.
Sure.
Like, that's where I'm like, no one is just black and white like this.
No, I mean,
there's got to be something else fueling this.
Well, Chris, you're married, so it's like, I feel like
you have the ability to love.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Okay. I'm not against love. It's just that hate is a lot better and a lot more fun. You know what I mean? Like, I always describe it like this. Like, I don't hate as a personality flaw. I hate because it's a good time. It's a sport. Huh. You know, like, some people play baseball. I hate. That's the best. You know, like, that's what I like to do. I like trashing things. I like roasting people. I like roasting things. I like roasting things I like. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's the Boston upbringing.
Okay.
Because I feel like Massachusetts is very much like that.
Pretty brutal.
You're just not ever out there not getting called a name by a loved one.
That's true.
You know, like, it's fucking idiot.
Constant shit.
Yeah, you know, you're always constant shit talking.
Yeah,
and so it's one of those things where it's just like, I grew up in a lower middle class Massachusetts family filled with EMTs and firefighters and cops and everything else.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of like, you're always getting called, you know, gay slurs and racial slurs and all kinds of stuff that you're like, but I'm not a black guy. Why are you calling me that? You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're just like confused as a kid, but that kind of shit talking is fun for me. But I know that it is not a way that you have to represent yourself in society.
Right.
If you want to be able to just get things like anything from the grocery store or talking to a bank teller.
Right.
Hey, bitch, money. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so I enjoy it.
Give me my change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and you see those people in the world and you think, not for me. Because I want to do the thing. Because also part of like social interaction for me is just being like, I like having enough time to watch movies, essentially. So social interaction should be brisk, because the sooner you're home, the sooner a movie is on.
But that's some version of a social interaction.
Huh?
I mean,
it is.
Like,
no, but I like to keep it as, so the best way to do that is to keep it polite.
You're like simultaneously like furious and fascinated at people at the same time.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
But then what never makes anger turn into anything that is debilitating is my understanding that like you said, none of it matters.
But does that mean you're only nice to people who can give you something?
No. In the past.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Massive manipulator.
Right.
People were pawns.
Gotcha.
You know?
Yeah,
you know? And then and then that doesn't really work either, because also, like, what it is just my general probably apathy has helped me not become that person anymore, because I'm like, I actually doesn't matter. Like, I don't get that mad at shit. And when I do, I'm mad for about 10 seconds. I'm like, why am I mad? You know? Or if something goes wrong, I'm not like, oh man, the universe is against me. I'm like, of course it went wrong.
Right.
Everything goes wrong. And if something doesn't go wrong, awesome. Like I said, hope for nothing. And if something, that's cool. Great.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome. That worked out. If it works out, amazing. You want to, sometimes you want things to work out, but if something doesn't work out, I'm never like, oh man, I'm like, eh. Things don't work out all the fucking time.
It sounds like a very non-stressful way to live.
Yes.
But I wish I could convince myself to think like
that. It took a lot of work.
Maybe I should, I'll just go to the trailer park for a year, see what happens.
You will, I don't know what modern trailer park is like.
Jersey trailer park? I mean, I used to hang out in some with some friends.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fairly,
you could save
fairly
some
similar
money.
Experience, just winter coats.
Sure. Move the family
different
to the trailer park.
Probably. I bet it was a little methy down there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, not so much. Not a lot of meth up here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that's the opioid state now, right? You just go to pill houses and get whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I got moved to Florida. You know what I'm saying?
Florida. Florida's a really good base of operations for it being lousy. And it's also a wonderfully criminal place.
It's a bizarre place. Mm-hmm.
It is a bizarre place.
It really
place.
Is. It truly
it
a bizarre
is the weirdest
place.
State, I think.
It still hasn't caught up with even some of the more podunk fucking American states. It feels eccentric and strange in a way that it always will, even as it becomes, it's like throwing good money at bad. You know, it's like as much as they try to class up Florida, Florida's just always just going to be a garbage swamp with a bunch of cool stuff built on top of it. You know, or interesting things or money or great houses or cool celebrities living there and making art or whatever.
So Florida's just been a pig in a dress this whole time.
Absolutely. 100%. And more, the dress gets fancier, but it's still a pig in a dress.
Gotcha.
But I loved living in Florida. I actually always think myself, I'd go back to Florida because it's cheap and it's a great base of operations. Fly anywhere in the world for relatively inexpensive. Fly anywhere in America for relatively inexpensive. When I was in combat, it was just so easy to be there and have that $150 rent and go on tour for fucking 3 months.
Yeah.
And just be like, cool.
Sure.
We didn't make any money, but my rent's paid already.
It's funny you say that. My father moved to Florida, Tampa specifically.
Yep. Beautiful
and,
Tampa.
You know, he basically is like, yeah, my life rules besides for all the people I live around.
Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of like, he's like, my house rules.
Yep.
I can't have this in Jersey. I can't have this in Jersey. I can't have this weather. I can't have a boat. I can't have this stuff. But I just have to live around Floridians.
Yeah. Which is
the trade-off.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And the heat's brutal. As a person who, even in Florida, didn't like to wear shorts, and I lived there for 13 some odd years, it's hard. It's hard living.
And if mosquitoes like you, no good.
No good. They don't like me, so I was lucky. But that humidity, which is actually worse now, I think, than it was in fucking the 90s. You know, it's obviously just because the fucking world is falling apart, so it's just grosser. You know, and anywhere, if you had some sort of weather, it's worse now. You know, than ever before, you know, so
we're definitely feeling that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's been rough.
We're out here freezing.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of assholes in December. Remember that fucking Christmas where it was like shirts off?
Oh yeah.
It was like a 65 degree Christmas. Was that two Christmases ago?
Yeah. Not long ago.
I was like, I remember getting out of the movie theater on Christmas being like, fuck off. Why are we have jackets on?
Yeah.
You know, just like, this is miserable.
Yeah.
So anyways, so yeah, dude, Florida's great. What are you talking about?
So I have a friend, Frank.
Okay.
Who is always talking about the need for the world to have a reset button.
Sure.
Basically, he thinks like 2/3 of humanity need to die.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be like a massive reset and overhaul of everything.
Sure.
Now, his logic always seems thin to me because I always just think that would happen and the same thing is just going to pop up again.
Yeah.
Because it's human nature. Like, what do you think, someone who obviously looks into this a lot or thinks about it a lot, like, what's the end game? Like, are we going to make it or are humans just that fundamentally flawed that we're not?
I think that it'll still go for a good many generations because the thinking mind is resilient enough and arrogant enough to think that it can't end there and it can't end with them.
Right.
So there'll always be a push. Now, that being said, if this great neo-80s impending doom of nuclear fucking Holocaust happens, well, Frank might get his fucking wish.
Right.
You know what sure. I mean? Because it feels realer than it's ever felt ever in the world.
In our lifetime.
Yeah, in our lifetime, for sure. Sure, they scared kids in the 50s and fucking with all that kind of stuff, but it wasn't that real. It's right. more real now when we got a couple goofballs threatening
yeah.
something that's like not that funny to threaten with.
And way I like more dark of the jokes. Weapons exist now than they did in the 50s.
Yeah, yeah. absolutely. Yeah. So... but I think that like, if that never happens, it's, you know, it's either going to turn into Blade Runner or it's going to tank. You know what I mean? But I think it'll turn into Blade Runner because people just don't think that it can end with them, you know? So that human resilience, the way the mind is being complex and that kind of the ego and the arrogance of the human race will just drag it out longer than it'll be like the fucking end of the last Lord of the Rings movie.
Okay.
Where there was like 47 ends. You know what I mean? Where you're like, this isn't over yet? Yeah. Go fuck yourself. Really? And that will be how the human race goes.
Yeah.
Until there's just a certain point in time where...
Yeah, it's just like jump into the pit of lava, asshole.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just jump in.
Just jump in.
Just come on.
Like, it's true.
Just take one.
I know the world's going to go on after I die, but it sort of doesn't seem like it.
Yep.
Like I know it, but it's also like... And I think about it, but I'm also like, it doesn't seem real.
Yeah, it's interesting to think. I like that concept that the ego of man himself won't allow his generation to be the last one.
Absolutely not.
That's like where the driving force is. Yeah, it's true.
It is probably the only driving force. It's not a great future for the children. It's not anything. It's literally like, I will not be the last.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's the most deep down thought in somebody who feels like they're the most selfless person in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just like, I will not be the last one. You know, and then you push that. And I think that could probably involve people wanting to have kids and things like that. Like, I want that, the idea of generation. I feel like I'm doing my part in ending it by not having them.
Mm. Yeah,
you
yeah,
know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean? You know, like, for every positive vote, there's a bunch of negatives. You know what I mean? But right. also, I'm helping not add more to a world that I think is just, I like watching, but I don't think is any good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like fucking reality TV. You know, you know, you're like, I just keep watching the Kardashians. I know it is not a good idea, you know? So that's, you know, that's just the, you know, the long game of it, I guess is that, yeah, is the ego, you know, is people just won't let it die.
So the sci-fi movies of perfect societies living in harmony in like 2600, not going down.
How many more dystopian ones are there, though?
Many more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's how that'll go
down.
And
we dictate our own fate because yeah. it's what we think.
Yeah, totally. Sure. It'll be, you know, it'll be those skyscrapers with people living in basically tenement apartments. And they'll be like, you know, fucking 10,000 people in a fucking skyscraper.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And there'll be fucking warlords and fucking, you know, and all kinds of fucking crazy shit. Maybe. Or maybe not. You know, like... Maybe it'll just look like this forever, but with better technology.
Or are the warlords already here and they're just dressed in suits? And
that's a great way to look at it too.
At you the whole time.
That's a very peace punk way to look at it. You know,
it's kind of true.
No, absolutely. You know? Yeah, like, no, it's very true.
Like,
you know?
There's, you know, being Genghis Khan's not going to get you anywhere these days. It's going to get shot down pretty quick.
Yep.
So there's other ways to be that.
Yeah. You know, you just be moneyed and maybe not be smart, but be moneyed.
Man, I think I'm done. I'm leaving my family, everything after this. Yeah. Fuck it.
But yeah, then just think about those moments.
I should go do heroin. I should kill someone. I've been thinking about.
Yes, but then that's the thing that's
killing
what makes
someone
you
on heroin.
That makes you on the other side though. The fact that like, yes, sure, all of that, none of it matters, but what makes you human is how you function inside of that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So you chose to do this amazing thing. Kids and do that route, you know, and fill it with love, right? Even
if I have to create a character to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's fine because that's doing it. And that what that looks like is that you know the character, but nobody knows the character.
Mm.
Everybody just sees Benny.
Deep.
Sure.
That motherfucker's already a character.
Yeah.
Yes. He already is.
You know, but they think like Benny's all right. Yeah. I like Benny.
Right.
You know what I mean? They don't know.
They don't know.
I announce it enough that people are like, right. He's not being real with me.
That's true.
It's true.
But I believe in that kind of transparency. But that also, like I said, it's like doesn't mean that I don't like people. I like individuals. I just don't like humans as a genre. Yeah. But I do like watching them.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always been very observant. Or I don't know if I retain, but I like watching people.
Jonah needs like 9 hours of breath work right now just to get back to a baseline.
A day with Chris is 7 extra days in the yoga tank.
You're right, Jonah?
Yeah, I feel good. I feel
How's your
good.
Spirit? Is it crippled?
No. It feels free.
Feel?
Yeah.
Good.
At this point in time, Jonah's had this conversation with me enough.
I have.
That's true.
It's not a shock to his system.
And
he's
has
just like
listened to a lot of. I mean, how many times have you listened to "Humanity is the Devil"? By
a lot
integrity?
Of times.
I was going to say.
I do.
There's a lot
I
of
do
integrity
a lot of
happening.
Spiritual things, but I also have a very nihilistic side
you do.
As well. So yeah. I can sort of.
You do.
I like that hearing both sides.
Jonah's trying. Cool.
I'm trying.
Yeah. He's trying, man.
Yeah.
We're all trying.
Brad's just like Brad's got a lighter to the table right now.
I'm
just like fuck it.
It's just too much.
Yeah, he's done.
We hate it every time Chris comes on.
No.
We
love it. You got to come back soon. But yeah, everyone buy Chris's book. We'll put a link to it in the outro and intro.
Or don't buy it.
Yeah. Whatever you feel like. And listen, I know that if you think it's bad, then it's probably bad. But if you like it, then you have bad taste.
Boy, that was deep.
That was intense. It's come up for air. Thank you so much to Chris Norris for
Jonah's
coming
sucking
by.
Sucking on a doobie right now.
Please buy his book. If this sounded interesting to you, please buy his book, Hunchback 88. Google Hunchback 88, and I'm sure you can find it.
Yep.
If you can know how to listen to a podcast.
Yep.
Shout out to A-Bar.
Yeah, once
Thank
again,
you for letting
this
us
was
record
recorded
here.
At A-Bar in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
Yes, I also wanted to mention... Benny's band is playing a small show this summer, so you should definitely get tickets. What's the name of the show?
It's called the Gubernatorial's Ball, and it's a from what I can understand, it's a gala,
okay,
sort of like a black tie gala,
okay,
that honors past and present governors,
yes,
of New York,
and I believe there's a couple other bands playing,
yeah, there is.
Or musicians,
and
or
there
something.
There should be refreshments,
okay. Definitely get tickets because it's going to
refreshments. I'll come.
Yeah,
it's going to be a very intimate experience. So definitely, you want to get ahead of this one.
Yeah, I'd say
don't miss out. I think it's on Randall's Island.
Yeah,
Limited seating.
Yeah, limited seating. Yeah. And also, if you want to support this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/goingofftrack. Different levels of incentives, bonus episodes, fun stuff.
Just put up a couple outtakes just recently up there.
Outtakes, yeah, early access. And you can also go to venmo.com/offtrack if you want to shoot us a couple bucks. If you don't have money, that's cool. Neither do we. You can go to iTunes. Leave us a nice review. So thanks to Chris for coming by.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah. Thanks to all the comments we get. If you see us out, we appreciate it. We love hearing from you, and we'll be back with another podcast next week.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Bye.
Yeah.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.